We're going to learn today about honesty and deception, and we're going to begin with five fact patterns. And after we discuss the five fact patterns, we're going to learn a bit about the nature of the prohibition to lie, to be deceitful, and what the exceptions are. Then we'll return to the fact patterns at the end of the shiur. So the first ethical dilemma is the following. If someone asks you to borrow money, but you believe that this person will not repay the loan, you believe that the person will feel bad if you tell him that, what should you do? Second question, someone comes to the door collecting money and you're not in a position to see this person. Are you permitted to send your young child to tell the person that you are not home? The third fact pattern, you are taking a course in university and the professor has taught the course for 20 years. And he always uses the same final for the course. Someone has a copy of the previous final. Are you permitted to look at it before the final, or must you ask the professor if he permits it? The fourth fact pattern. You are visiting your relative at a hospital, and as you're about to leave, you remember that someone else is currently a patient at the hospital. You visit the second person, and when you walk into her room, she is overjoyed and says, "Thank you so much for taking the time to drive all the way here to visit me. It's such a long distance and it means so much to me." Must you tell her that you came to the hospital to visit your relative and not to visit her? And the fifth fact pattern. A couple is about to get married, but the bride is a bala tshuva, and before she was observant, she was intimate with another man. But she is embarrassed about the reader of the ksuva not saying the traditional line of the ksuva that she is a betula or basula, that she is she's not had relations before. So what can she do? So those are the five fact patterns. And what we're going to do again is discuss the nature of the obligation to be honest, not to deceive, what the exceptions are, and then answer these five questions. So there is a prohibition to lie, and it's actually a fascinating formulation in the Torah. In Parshat Mishpatim, the Torah says, Midvar Sheker Tirchak. Torah doesn't say, lo tishakru, don't lie. It says, stay far away from a false matter. And that's unusual or peculiar aspect, number one, about the prohibition to lie. Secondly, we know that there are often competing values with honesty. There are examples when lying was done in the Torah, in Chazal. Yaakov lied and he tricked Yitzchak. He told Yitzchak, Anochi Esav Becharecha, I'm Esav, your firstborn. There's a famous debate between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. If there is a bride who's not so pretty, Beis Shammai says, you have to say, Kala Kamoshehi, she is how she is. And Beis Hillel says, you can distort the truth, you can say, Kala Na Vachasuda. Additionally, so what I want to sort of discuss again is the nature of the prohibition to lie or deceive, and then discuss how to deal with these competing values, and then apply the analysis to the fact pattern. So first, the prohibition to lie. So this strange formulation of Midvar Sheker Tirchak. So is this formulation more strict or more lenient? In other words, if the Torah had simply said, Lo Tishakru, don't lie, would that have been a more lenient formulation or a more strict formulation? Is the formulation Midvar Sheker Tirchak more strict or more lenient? So some Mefarshim view Midvar Sheker Tirchak as a more strict formulation and simply not to lie. Haktava Kabbalah of Mecklenburg explains that you have to not simply not lie. Or the reason why the Torah says stay far away from a false matter is because it's so common to lie. So the Torah has to give additional musr, as it were, as to stress how it's so bad to lie that stay far away from a false matter because it's so common to lie. The Sfarno also seems to take the position of Midvar Sheker Tirchak is an additional stringency, as he explains that what it means is that you shouldn't say anything that could be interpreted as false. However, the Aznaim LaTorah of Rav Sarotzkin explains that Midvar Sheker Tirchak is less strict than saying Lo Tishakru, because he explains that it's not always forbidden to lie. The Torah would say Lo Tishakru means you're never allowed to lie. That's not true. Sometimes you're allowed to lie. So Midvar Sheker Tirchak means that when you're permitted to lie, try to stay as far away as possible from actually lying. Now, there are two basic understandings as to the nature of the prohibition. It's potentially a sin of a benam lachavero, you're harming the other person, and maybe it's also benam latzmo, you're harming your neshama. We're supposed to imitate a Kadosh Baruch Hu who reflects MS. So when we lie, we are not imitating God. We are hurting our neshama, as it were. The Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Kuf Gimel Amud Aleph states that habitual liars will not merit receiving the Shechina, the divine presence. Taken from the pasuk in Tehillim of Dover Shkarim Lo Yikon LeNeged Einai, someone who says lies will not remain steadfast in God's sight. There's also, besides this idea of being truthful, not harming another person, related to that is the prohibition of Geneivas Das, of deceiving someone. Even when you don't explicitly say something false, but if you deceive someone, so there are different mafarshim who explain what the basis of this prohibition is. Is it Rabbi Yonah seems to say that it's sheker, some mafarshim say it's onah, oppressing of the person, or potentially the Ritva says it's geneva, you're stealing. You're stealing, presumably, someone's thought, someone owns a certain understanding, and you are taking that away from them. They believe X, and you are stealing that information from them. The classic, or they believe that you've done them a favor when in fact you haven't. So you're stealing perhaps some expectations they have, goodwill. The examples in the Gemara on Chulin Daf Tzadi Dalam and Aleph regarding Geneivas Das are Al Yisarhev Adam Lachaveir Lisod Etzlov Yodeir Bo Shehu Eno Soed. When you urge your friend to dine with you and you know that he can't come. So just you're falsely, you're deceiving him to make it think that you really want him to come to you so you can build goodwill. Again, the Gemara also has another example. Lo yarbe lo betik rovos, betik roves, v'yodea bo shein makabel. You offer him a lot of gifts that you know he's not going to accept it. Lo yiftach lo chavios hamachoros lechenvani. You shouldn't open barrels that you plan on opening up anyway because you're a storekeeper. You're going to open a fancy bottle of wine. And you tell him, oh, I mean, I'm opening up this fancy bottle of wine just in your honor, but you're going to open it up anyway. And v'lo yomar lo, soch shemen mipachrei kamei. You don't tell him, oh, you can use this oil to rub on your skin from an empty barrel and you get an empty flask. You know he's going to say no, he doesn't want it. So these are examples of deceit, which are forbidden, geneivas das. But what about competing values? There are competing values. Sometimes honesty is not always recommended, or perhaps not always required. The Gemara in Yevamos Daf Samechem and Bay states, "Amar Rav Yila Mishum Rav Elazar Rav Shimon, Mutalo La Adam Lishanos Bedavar Hashal." A person is permitted to change the truth when it comes to peace. And the first example that the Gemara gives is the story of Yosef and his brothers. That after Yaakov died, Yosef's brothers told Yosef that Daddy said that you should be nice to us because they were afraid that Yosef would harm them. So we see from here that you're allowed to change the truth for the sake of peace. Rabbi Nosson Omer Mitzvah. Rabbi Nosson said it's not only permitted, but it's at least sometimes it could be a mitzvah. And the example is with Shmuel. When Shmuel was commanded by God to anoint David, Shmuel said, Eich Eilech v'shem Hashel v'hargani, v'harguni, that Shmuel said, how can I go and anoint David HaMelech? Shaul's going to hear, and he's going to kill me. So what did God say? God said, okay, take an animal, say you're going to sacrifice it. So God is instructing Shmuel to lie to protect him. Devet Rabbi Shmuel, Tana, the base manager Rabbi Shmuel, they learned, God loves Shalom. Shalom is so great. Even God himself changed, distorted the truth. So this refers to when Sarah said in her heart, after the angel said that Sarah's going to have a child, Sarah said, we're going to have a child? My husband is really old. He's 99 years old. How can we have a child? So when God told her the story to Avram, he said that Sarah said that about herself. He said that she's too old. So we have examples here where it seems that it's sometimes permitted and may even be obligated to lie for the sake of peace. Now, what's fascinating is that the Gemara says, Mutter Lishanos B'davar Shalom. You're allowed to change the truth. The Torah doesn't, the Gemara doesn't say Mutter Lishaker, that you're allowed to lie. Maybe the point is that Sheker reflects the antithesis of the will of God. And there's this big MS and there's little MS. Really, MS means to say the truth. But really, you know what MS really means? MS really means the will of God. Now, 95, 98% of the time, the will of God is telling the truth as accurately as you know it. However, there are times when there perhaps is a competing value that you could change the nature of the facts for a higher value. And changing the facts for a higher value might be considered MS, because it might reflect the will of God, Hashem Elokim MS, that's the will of God is to sometimes change a little bit for a higher value, for a higher goal. So that's why maybe it doesn't use the lashon of sheker, but use the lashon of lishanos. And Rav Dessler makes this comment, Rav Yav Kamenetsky makes this comment, that's how can you say it's MS when let's say someone wants to harm your friend, and he says, do you know where your friend is? And you say, yeah, it's right over there. So the person now harms him. Is that MS what you did? No, that's against the will of God. MS reflects the will of God. Again, Rav Dessler makes this point as well. There are other values which can take precedent over the truth. There's the Gemara in Bava Metzia, Daf Chakimah Beis, cites Rabbi Yehuda Mar Shmuel, who says, Bahani Tlas Mili Avidi Rabbanon Dimishanum Bimilayu. There are three situations where the rabbis, and again, in Talmudic terms, hopefully, when they refer to rabbis, they're not only referring to people who know a lot of Torah, but these are individuals who have high ethical and moral values. Now, there are three situations where they can change their words, and others distort the truth. Number one, if someone asks them, how much do they know a certain mesechta? And they are allowed to be modest and say, no, they don't. They don't know it. Ubapurya. Let's say someone wants to know if someone had relations, was intimate with their spouse. No one has any right to know that. You can distort the truth there and not be open and honest about that. And also, be'ushpiza, and also to protect someone else's property. Let's say you had a wonderful time visiting, you were a guest in someone's home. And if you tell someone that this person is the best host, a whole bunch of people will come and visit this person's house and clean them out. So in these instances, you're allowed to distort the truth to protect either to protect someone's property, for humility reasons, or for reasons of modesty. The Gemara in the Darm Daf Chav Zayim and Beis talks about the frum gangster. What do I mean by the frum gangster? The Gemara there says that if, let's say, someone comes to your house and he says, I want to take your crops, and you say to him, you can take my crops. Well, I want you to know, it's truma. You lie and you say that it's truma. And so the person says, it's truma. I'm not going to take it. It belongs to the Kohen. That's why I call him a frum gangster, because he would clear you out and he would harm you in order to take your property. But if it's truma, he wouldn't take it. So you're allowed to lie, even though, you're allowed to lie to protect your property, because he has no right. He has no right to your property. In that case, you're allowed to lie. And Emes Liakov points that out when discussing Yaakov tricking Yitzchak. So he says that he makes the point that sometimes, as I said earlier, that if someone's chasing after someone and you tell him where he is this called MS? It's not MS. Sometimes you're allowed to engage in trickery in order to achieve an ultimate goal, a higher goal. So telling the truth is not always the highest goal, and we've given a few examples where you're allowed to distort the truth. Now, when it comes to deceiving someone, Geneva's Das, there are also exceptions. So what the Gemara in Chulin that we discuss, which says you're not allowed to urge someone to come to your house, you know he can't come. So in that, the Sma points out that the Shulchan Aruch says, lo yisarhev, don't urge the person. But what that means is you shouldn't urge the person and push, come, when you know he doesn't want to come. So the person is mistakenly believes that you really want him to come, and he's going to have this unjustified goodwill, or you built up this goodwill with this person that's unjustified, and that's not right. However, the Sma writes, the Sefer Mir Sinai, a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch writes that Ladaber velo pamachas u'shtayim bo echol imi mutter, but to tell him once or twice, come and eat with me, is permitted. Because let's say you invite a whole bunch of people to dine with you, and you don't ask this other person, and people can say, why don't you invite this other person? Because you think he's a loser, he's a nothing. You know that he has other plans, but no one else does. So in that case, where the person is going to feel bad by you not inviting him, other people are going to think he's a nebuch, so then you are certainly allowed to invite him once or twice. The Lashon Shulchan Aruch says, lo yisar hev. You shouldn't urge the person to come. The Shulchan Aruch has another exception in Siman Reish Chav Ches Ivav. He says, "Ve'imu davar di boy leila suke daite she'ene osa bishvilo, umate atzmo she'sover she'osa bishvilo lichvodo." If it's something that if the person would have thought about it, he'd realize you're not doing this for him. And he mistakenly makes an unreasonable assumption saying you're doing something for him. Could go, what's an example? Shepaga b'chaveir b'derech. Let's say I'm walking down the street and I meet this guy. And v'savar zesh yotzel likrosu l'chabdo. And this person makes an unreasonable assumption. I walk down the street and I happen to meet this person, and he says to me, oh my gosh, thank you so much for coming to visit me. It's so wonderful. You're the best. I owe you so much. You really made my day. In that case, says the Shulchan Aruch, ein tzarich lodio. You don't have to correct his false assumption because that was an unreasonable assumption. He tricked himself, so you don't have to inform him. You don't have to inform him that he was being unreasonable. Now, even when you're allowed to distort the truth for the sake of, let's say, peace or for some greater goal, there are some conditions that need to be followed. The Orchos Tzadikim says that in Shar Chav Beis, uvachol elu sheitiru chachamim leshanos, in all these scenarios where Chazal allow you to change the truth, if he's able to make it so he doesn't lie, it's better than if he has to lie. Could go on, for example, if they ask him, do you know this particular mesechta? Yashiv, you should respond. You think I know? In other words, you don't explicitly lie. If you can remove the questioner in a way that you're not lying, who told Mot is very good. And this presumably is an explanation of Rashi's comment on the story of Yaakov tricking Yitzchak. Because what does Yaakov say to Yitzchak? Anochi Esav Bechorecha. I am Esav, your firstborn. Now he's clearly deceiving Yitzchak because Yitzchak believes that Yaakov is Esav. So Rashi says on that pasuk, Anochi. Yaakov and Esav hu b'chorecha. When Yaakov says Anochi, he means to say, I am who I am, I'm Yaakov, and Esav is your firstborn. But what does that mean? Yitzchak did not believe that. Yitzchak was tricked. He believed that Yaakov himself was Esav. So what's Rashi getting at? So presumably, there are, as we mentioned, this is probably the basis for what the Orchos Tzadikim said, when you can avoid lying, even when you're permitted or encouraged to deceive someone, if you can avoid explicitly lying, or you say something that could be interpreted as truthful, better that than explicitly lying. So, and that's why, for example, that can also be explained by the two prohibitions associated with lying. On the one hand, it's a beidam lachaveiro, and on the other one, it's a beidam laatzmo. So regarding the issue of, you know, you could be harming someone else when you're deceiving someone, maybe if there's a greater good, so then you're allowed to deceive someone. But what about the beidam laatzmo, that you're saying words that are false, that you're training yourself to saying words that are false, can harm your neshama. So that's why the Orchos Tzadikim says that even when you're deceiving someone, even when it may be allowed to deceive someone, in those instances, and when it might be encouraged to do so, still, if you can avoid actually saying words that definitely are false, It's better to avoid it. The Yamshel Shlomo Yevamos gives another condition to lying, that when you're allowed to lie, he says only davar shebakroi, it's only if it's once in a while. Let's say somehow you're engaged, you're a mediator between your father and your mother, and you're always going to have to lie. That you, even for the sake of peace, that's not appropriate. If it's a once in a while that you have to change the truth for the sake of peace, then it's okay. But if it's regular, then it's not, you shouldn't avoid it. The third condition is the based on the Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Mem Vav Mem Beis. Amar Rav Zeira says, Lo leima enesh li yinuka di yahivna loch midi v'lo yahiv lai. That a person should not say to a child, I'm going to give you something, you don't give it to him. Why? Mishum da'asi lag murei shikra, because you're teaching the child how to lie. Shenemar libnu l'shonam devar sheker. You're teaching them how to say things that are false. And based on Rav Zeira's ruling, that while Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach allows, because of Darchei Shalom, to tell an unwelcome guest that his host is not home, one should not use a child to deliver the message or even allow the child to hear the lie, because then you're training the child to lie. In other words, when someone is older and they understand the nuances that I'm generally always have to tell the truth, but there might be instances where there's a value greater than truth, but that's only a very small percentage of the time. Until the child has the notion of saying MS grounded into his sense of ethics and morality, then you shouldn't have a child lie, even when it's potentially for a legitimate reason. And so if we now return to our fact patterns, the first quiet, based on what we said, someone asks you to borrow money, but you believe this person will not repay the loan. You believe that the person will feel bad if you tell them that. What should you do? So you don't have to, you don't want to make the person feel bad. So it might be better because of Shalom, not to make the person feel bad, to not tell him that you don't trust the person. So what can you do? So probably the best way, if you can avoid lying, that's the best. In other words, the best thing might be to say, I'm not in a position to lend you money. So you're not saying, I'm not in a position to lend you money because I think you're not going to pay back. And I can't afford to give you money, knowing I'm not going to get the money back. But you're allowed to give off the impression that you would lend the money if not for the situation, if not for some other situation, and not tell the person directly, I'm not lending you money because I don't think you're going to pay me back. You make the person feel bad. So you can say something like, I'm not in a position to lend you money. We covered the second fact pattern just now. Someone comes to the door collecting money and you're not in a position to see this person. Are you permitted to send your young child to tell the person that you are not home? The answer of Shlomo Zalman Aruch says, based on the Gemara in Sukkah, no, you're not. Someone may go to the door and say that the person is not home, but you should not send a young child to do that. What about the third fact pattern? You're taking course in university and the professor has taught the course for 20 years and he always uses the same final for the course. Someone has a copy of the previous final. Are you permitted to look at it before the final, or must you ask the professor if he permits it? So in this instance, the professor, one way of looking at this is that the professor is really tricking himself. He's making an unreasonable assumption that no one's going to look at the test because he's giving it out. So presumably by you looking at it, even if he doesn't want you to look at it, he's making a very unreasonable assumption about people not looking at the test. Rabbi Willick thinks that it's public information and therefore you're allowed to use it even if the professor told you not to use it. Let's say you go to the hospital, you're visiting a relative, and then you're about to leave. You remember there's a second person. The second person is overjoyed. It says, thank you so much for taking time to drive all the way out here to visit me. It's such a long distance, and it means so much to me that you came to visit. So it depends. Do you have to be honest with the person? If there's a reasonable assumption if the person made a reasonable assumption that you came to visit the person, then you would have to correct that. Maybe if the person would feel awful, totally awful, then maybe not. But it would seem that if the person made a reasonable assumption that came to visit them, you are required to correct that reasonable assumption. Again, we're not talking about a case where the person is being harmed. Ganeva's Das is not only a situation where the person is being harmed by your deceit. Right? What were the cases of Ganeva's Das where you tell someone, you open a barrel, I'm opening the barrel for you, even when you don't have in mind you're going to open the barrel anyway. Okay, you're not harming the person. And then we also saw that you have to correct. If someone makes an assumption where they're going to give you an unjustified goodwill, with unjustified goodwill towards you, you have to correct it unless the person made an unreasonable assumption. So that's when it comes to the hospital visit. I try when I visit someone in the hospital and I visit a few people and someone says, oh, you only came to visit me. I try to tell them, you know, I came to visit a whole bunch of people. I could visit, you know, other people as well. And they might not be as grateful to me. I think they're still grateful if I were to visit them. But I think that is the correct thing to do. The last issue about the ksuva. So obviously the bride's going to be embarrassed if someone reads the ksuva and they don't recite the fact that she is a pasula. So what are you allowed to do? So that's embarrassing. Sometimes you're allowed to change the truth for purposes of embarrassment. So it actually depends in terms of what you're supposed to do with who was this the bride intimate with. If she was intimate with another Jew, or let's say she was intimate with her groom before the wedding, or she was intimate with another Jew, then actually you can write the word besula if the groom knows and he doesn't mind. They can write this ksuva, this document. The groom knows that she's not a besula, but he writes the besula and he's okay. He's still willing to give her the full value of the ksuva as if she was a besula. So then you can write besula, and the reader of the ksuva reads it as it is written. If the woman, the bride, let's say she was a convert, or let's say she was intimate with a non-Jew, or she was a divorcee, and she wants to hide this fact from the people. Now, these facts have to be on the ksuva, because let's say this woman has to get remarried. So in these instances, she would not be allowed to marry a Kohen. So you need to write that she is, you know, if she was with a non-Jew or she's a divorcee or a convert, you need to write, reflect that in the ksuva. So what you can do is, you have the reader of the ksuva, he'll have to know that what he's reading is not the real ksuva. He'll read something else. Or he'll read the ksuva, but he'll change the word. And the ksuva itself, that ksuva has to be accurate, but he can read whatever he wants, and that would be another case where you can distort the truth for the sake of not embarrassing the kala.